Welcome to How to Make Six Figures as an Expert Who Speaks. This is program number 2, Presentation Magic, How to Shine on the Platform. And today, Bert's going to talk with us about how to create a wow audience experience, how to speak with a powerful voice, how to deliver value every minute, and why to reveal your warts and flaws, 7 actions to complete in your first 3 minutes, and how to use humor, and where to get funny stories, and how to close your program. I have to tell you that Bert has helped me tremendously with my platform skills, and that's why I initially sought him out in the first place, and I just discovered so many other bonuses beyond that. I'm excited to have him talking with us today, sharing with some of the things that I've learned, some of the things that you've already heard him talk about on Monday, such as the 9 kinds of pauses and things like that. So, Bert, what can you tell us about how to create a wow audience experience?
Well, there's so much that one needs to do. Let's talk about what to do before going on. That's in the few moments before you get out there to speak, in order to be sure that you tingle and glow and give the audience the very best of you. The first thing to do is
zip up your pants. And then
generate an inner glow. Now, let me tell you how you do this, because anyone can do it. You consciously arouse a feeling, David, that is a combination of alertness, excitement, exhilaration, elation, anticipation, confidence, and emotional power, all within yourself, just as I did before this call. Then, simply tune into the fact that these feelings, these positive feelings, are intensifying. They are surging up. And you are consciously keeping this combination of emotions restrained and controlled, but ready to release, much like an arrow pulled back in the quiver to be released. This has the qualities, David, of the combination of the feelings and emotions you described builds up that wonderful excitement within you, knowing that you have the privilege of sharing your insights, sharing your wisdom with the people before you. And for those who are taking notes, the feelings to develop are alertness, excitement, exhilaration, elation, confidence, and emotional power.
How do you conjure up these feelings?
Just by welcoming them into your mind. It's difficult. This can be almost like nailing Jell-O to the wall and trying to say how to do it. You simply let it out. It's an allowing process from within yourself. Simply allowing yourself, David, to feel more alert, more excited, more exhilarated, more elated, more confident, knowing that you have an opportunity that will never recur again to talk to these people in this forum during this hour to make a positive difference in their lives. Now, let me go on. That was the inner glow. Let me tell you about the outer glow. You simply feel yourself surrounded by an aura of radiant personal magnetism, just as a real magnet is surrounded by a magnetic field. Finally, just before going on, smile with your eyes. And a smile that starts within the eyes also starts within the heart. It is at the heart level that you really get through to people. And you get through to people at the heart level by smiling with your eyes.
Yeah, and I've tried that, and you can do it simply by focusing on the intention to do it.
Exactly.
On Monday, you mentioned some exercises like stretching and breathing, and do you recommend doing that before each time you speak?
It's a good idea to involve yourself in physical movement. Well, of course, we're talking about backstage. Don't exercise in front of the audience. This can be standing on tippy-toe and attempting to touch the ceiling, even though the ceiling may be 30 or 40 feet high in a large meeting room, and often is in a large auditorium. That's one thing to do. Moving your body all the way to the right while your hands are way up there, all the way to the left, not moving your feet. Just stretching. Simply getting back in touch with your body and being sure that your consciousness is carefully housed within your body. Obviously, go to the bathroom. I mentioned that on Monday. Obviously, don't drink too much liquid before going on because you don't want to have any urges while you're on, yet have water at hand. Not ice water. Ice water is not good for your throat. Just room temperature water. I get so thrilled when I know, and this has been going on for over a quarter of a century, I get so thrilled when I know that I'm going to have the opportunity to influence other lives, other consciousnesses. And I do this, as I think I may have discussed briefly on Monday, partly with my words. I'll change the way I say it. You do this partly with your words, and even more significantly, by the state of being that you bring to the platform. Your spirit of service, your spirit of caring, your passionate desire to make a positive difference in the lives of the people you have the privilege to address.
Anything else we do before we actually step up to the platform and grab the mic?
For the moment, I would say this. There are things to do to cherish and care for the voice. This is one of the topics you said we should discuss. Shall I talk about that?
Great.
To begin with, avoid smoking. And avoid smoke of any kind. Avoid being in a room with smokers. And certainly avoid breathing in any kind of smoke, including smoke from the kitchen. Second point, in order for your voice to be at its peak, avoid milk and milk products. And this includes yogurt. Yogurt is good for you, but not before you speak. You see, mucus deposits increase when you consume dairy products. Therefore, avoid them before you speak. Then also antihistamines are to be avoided in the hour or two before you speak, because these tend to dry your throat. More, avoid coffee and most teas. These, in turn, dry throat tissues. Now, here's another interesting point. Be sure you're using a microphone. Don't strain your voice by attempting to work a large group without a microphone. And, of course, always have water handy. Avoid clearing your throat. If you clear your throat, you can actually make your throat sore. Further point for those living in northern climates, don't breathe in very cold air from the outside. This will not help you. It exposes your throat. Wear a scarf. Another point, don't use throat sprays, except for the one that I have before me right now called Entertainer's Secret. This is what entertainers in Vegas use, not to get Vegas throat. Now, if you don't know about Entertainer's Secret, let me give you a web address. www.entertainers-secret.com. A wonderful product that many speakers I've told about already knew about. So by all means, use that for your throat.
The first speaking tour I did, one of the workshops was quite small and quite intimate. It had like 20 people in it in a cozy room. And they were having trouble with the PA system.
Yes.
So I figured, well, I'll just do without it. And boy, did I regret that.
I'll bet.
So even though it can be a small room and a smaller number of people, if you can use a PA system, I would highly recommend it. That way you don't have to shout, you don't have to work hard to be heard, and they don't have to work hard to hear you, and you can keep your energy for your audience instead of lose your voice.
Well put. When you, the speaker, are presenting a full-day program, disappear at lunchtime. Have your lunch quietly, alone, and in silence. Don't allow yourself to be involved in conversations with people who love you and want to talk more and ask you more questions. Just disappear. For that hour or hour and 15 minutes, let your voice rest and recover. And, of course, have a light lunch. Don't have a heavy lunch because you'll be on again in the afternoon. Next point, it is a good idea to have throat lozenges with you. Three brands that I happen to like, and these are not the only three brands, are Halls, Pine Brothers, and Ricola. I happen to have in my hand, as we speak, a Ricola throat lozenge, just in case I feel I need it during this program right now. Now, tea is good, certain kinds of tea. There's a brand of tea called Traditional Medicinals Throat Coat Tea. All health food stores will have this, and many markets too, in the health food section. And you can get that in tea bags, and all you do is get some hot water and put the tea in, and it doesn't hurt to put some lemon in too. It tends to soothe your throat. If you are speaking in a dry area such as Las Vegas, Here's something that Las Vegas entertainers know to do. Fill the bathtub with water and leave the bathroom door open. This tends to raise the humidity in your sleeping room. Another point, gargle with hot salt water. Think of your voice as your instrument. Hum. For example, everyone knows Mary Had a Little Lamb. Whatever tonal register you hum that tune in is your natural tone. You'll feel your hum pulsate off your palate being the roof of your mouth, and there you find the right placement of your voice. Don't try to deepen your voice. Don't try to talk like this. Talk in your natural tone of voice, and that way your voice will last the longest. There's more and more that I teach in my work. However, I think we've covered that adequately. Let's move to the actual program itself.
Yeah, stagecraft. What do you do when you get up there to wow them?
Ah, let me tell you, the first 1 to 3 minutes, you promise the folks 7 things. As it happens, I'm going to share 9 things to do in the first 2 or 3 minutes, and please do take notes, folks, because this stuff is precious. It took me a quarter of a century to learn all of these things. You begin by acknowledging your audience, expressing gratitude that you're having a chance, an opportunity to make a difference in their lives. That was the first point. Let them know you know they're there. And by the way, as I have said at other times and maybe even the other day, look into the eyes of one person in the room each time you say a sentence and change the person. Move from one person to another to another. Let me tell you how this works, what this magic is. When you are looking at one person, speaking directly into the eyes of that person, everyone else in the audience feels the emotional connection. Everyone else, even in a room with 5,000 people in it, they are the surrogates for that person, and they feel the emotions of the person into whose eyes you are looking. A powerful technique. And they know the person to whom you are, into whose eyes you are looking, they know that you are talking to them. They never forget it.
The first thing you said was to acknowledge the audience. And
right.
Can you give us a sample of what that might sound like?
Something like words such as these, which I'm just making up on the spot. Thank you so much for allowing me the opportunity to make a difference in your lives. I want to promise you that during our hour together, I am thoroughly dedicated to sharing with you insights, value, understandings, strategies, tools, and keys and technique directly addressing the issue that we are to discuss today. In addition, and inevitably, I'm going to share something about my philosophy of life, something about what right I have to be here, something which hopefully will be of true value to you.
Okay, very good.
Well, I just made that up, David, but that's the general idea. All right, now continuing on what to do in the first 3 minutes. Get your audience to join in applauding, possibly your introducer, assuming you have one, and you may or may not, or the meeting planner that arranged for you to be there. Let's give a big hand for Mary Smithers, or whoever the name may be, for arranging for this meeting and giving you the opportunity to be here, giving me the opportunity to share with you. And everybody applauds. And that brings them into the room, brings their consciousness into the room, so to speak. Third of the 9 points I'd like to share, compliment the people in the room for being there and for wanting the outcome that you can influence, or perhaps for simply wanting to tune into your wisdom, whatever it may be. Now, here is the fourth point, and boy, do I love doing this. Dozens, if not hundreds of times I've done this. I get off of the stage, if there is a stage, or away from the front of the room, have in mind that I've got a wireless mic, whether it's handheld or a clip-on, a wireless mic. So you order it that way when you're going in, or a very, very long microphone cord, and invade the audience space. Boy, does this get them. You're not some mystic figure up there standing on the podium or behind the lectern. You're coming out among them, talking among them. You've seen many speakers do this and do it all the time, because even talk to some audience members and getting them to share with you, hold the mic next to their mouth, obviously, so they can let everyone else hear why they're there and what they want to learn. Now let's go further. This is number 5 of the 9. tell the audience how you got there. What is your right to be standing there before them? What is your experience relative to the topic? You do this lightly and quickly. You let them know that indeed you are worthy of their attention. Now, I love to do this one. This is the number 6 of the 9. I love to say the words, "This is your program, not mine." And I want to encourage questions. On the subject of encouraging questions, there were 2 ways to do this. One way is to say, "You're most welcome to ask your questions while I'm speaking." This is the least desirable way. The second way is to have the people write their questions on a piece of paper and have someone pick up the questions, the pieces of paper, and bring them up to you. That way you can decide which ones you'll really answer or not. And the third way is to have a Q&A period, questions and answer period, after your program is over, just as we are going to do after the first hour here. Now, that was 6 of the 9. Let me give you the last 3. Number 7 is a favorite of mine. I call it the shocker. You say something controversial, something shocking, and that really grabs their attention. For example, when I have spoken to sales groups, I've often said, because I was for a long time a platform speaker on the subject of how to make more sales, I would say, "I know something about you folks, even though we've never met before. I know that you aren't selling as much as you could be selling, and as much as I say you could sell, and during our time together, I'm going to show you some strategies and techniques that I use to sell more, and it may very well be a useful package of information for you." Now, here's the 8th one. Get your audience to write down something that you say, something that is profound, a brilliant truth, a blinding flash of the obvious. And you have to, of course, have that tidbit of insight, that bit of brilliance ready to deliver at the time. Now, when they write that down, that turns up the screws of their desire for your message. And finally, bridge into content with humor. I could share an old joke if you want me to, David, about how to bridge into a model of bridging into content with humor. I will say to the audience after doing the first 8 things, "You know, folks, we're at the same point right now that the drunk was when he woke up in the drunk tank on a Saturday night." He woke up Sunday morning, actually, and he looked at the jailer and said to the jailer, "What am I here for?" And the jailer looked at him very sternly and said, "Drinking." "Oh," said the drunk, "well, then let's get on with it." So now we're going to get on with the program. So that's an old joke. I was using that 20 years ago. But it just comes to mind.
New one on me. I never heard it.
Well, okay. It's not a good idea to use old humor. When people have heard it before, it falls flat. You got to be sure whatever you say is really fresh.
So can you run through the 9 quickly and ask for a sample?
I've already said acknowledge the audience and told you how I would do it.
Right.
As for getting the audience to join you in applauding, perhaps the meeting planner, perhaps the introducer, let's say your introducer was George Smith. Let's all give George a great hand for reading that introduction exactly the way I wrote it. Or something like that.
Okay.
As for complimenting the audience, I certainly do congratulate all of you for being in this room, wanting to invest an hour of your life or a day of your life, as the case may be, and I feel fully accountable to you to give you the value you came for and a whole lot more. As for invading the office, the audience space, get down off the platform or from the front of the room and just walk among them.
And do what?
Walk among them and ask a few questions that tell you more about the audience. What do you most want to get out of being here? What's the most important concern you bring to this room? And look for someone who raise a hand, walk over to that person, and let them share that concern on the microphone so everyone in the room can hear it.
Great, yeah. So when you ask that question of one person, everybody else in the room can relate.
Exactly.
And they're thinking about what they want to get from the program.
Right. Now, in terms of number 5, telling how you got here, your background, your experience, well, when I was doing sales programs, for example, I would tell the true story that I was the top producer in 3 different national sales groups. That really is the truth. And ultimately, they kept asking me to do sales training programs for those groups, etc. And so I come here with 20 years of experience doing this sort of thing, and I want to save you from making the mistakes I made before I became as good as I later became.
Yeah,
on top of all those mistakes. You know, folks, I would say to them, from mistakes come experience. And from experience comes wisdom. if I've got any wisdom to share with you today, and I do, you'll know it's based on 10,000 mistakes. They love self-deprecating humor, David. They love it when you do that to yourself.
I imagine that would be a good antidote for possibly coming off as boasting.
Exactly.
Well, I've been doing what I've been doing for 20-some years, and I've achieved the tops in my field. That's why I'm here. It's probably better to list your credentials, but also list your fallacies as well.
Exactly. And I've already given you an example of encouraging questions. This is your program, ladies and gentlemen, not mine. And so I want you to come up with all the questions you can, and I gave you that example earlier. Also, the shocker, I gave you that example. As for getting your audience to write down something profound, well, right on this phone call, this minute, I might say this to the 200 or 300 people who are on the line. What is the most exciting thing you've heard during the first 23 minutes of this program? And then get them to write that down. And then in terms of bridging into your content with humor, I told you the old story, the drunk and the drunk tank story. So I've now given you an example of every one of the nine.
Great. And realize that we're all newbies here, so this is old stuff to you, but I got to represent the newbies.
All right.
Because I just know that we need this stuff.
Yes.
Okay, so what else about creating a wow audience experience after the first 3 minutes?
Keep in mind, for many, many years, I did programs all over the United States, mostly full-day programs, 4 a week as a rule, and sometimes even 5 a week. And let me tell you, that's exhausting. Physically exhausting. Here are some of the ways that I would make my programs more exciting. 1, I would arrange that a series of John Philip Sousa marches was playing as the audience assembled, rousing music, always ending with, at least in the United States, with the Stars and Stripes Forever. And the moment that the Stars and Stripes Forever would end, that's the moment I would start to speak. I would always begin the program in their face. In fact, I would start off not even being way in the front of the room, but I'd be very close to the front row, almost as if I were an audience member. I would then tell the audience to be sure to take notes. Now, of course, the learning guide or handout or program manual, all of those words are used, would be whatever one I provided or caused to be provided, and presumably it would be worthy of taking notes. I would make a reference to that day, the day of the month, the day of the week, and to some historic event that happened on that day.
Hey Bert, I wanted to share with you that when I was in Chicago, I was giving a workshop the day after Chicago won the World Series.
Yeah.
And so you gave me advice to find something in the newspaper when you're in a different location, there's something that shows the audience that, you know a bit about them and you can relate to them. So the first thing I did when I started the workshop was to acknowledge for winning the World Series. And, everybody had a great time with that one.
Oh, I'm sure.
But reading the newspaper when you get into town, I think that was a great tip.
One of the things. Exactly right. I would always prepare a customized learning guide for that group. I recommend that. Something with a cover, something nicely bound, not with a staple. Staple shows how little you care. I would bind it professionally or have it bound professionally. And something with the date and the name of the event, the name of the place, so they have a memento to carry away with them. I like to call the learning guide an operating guide to indicate by that suggestion that this is something to continue using for months and years into the future. Another technique that I love to use to make the program even better is to, first of all, get from the meeting planner the names of 3 to 5 experts in that industry or in that company. I would then get the phone number of that person, each person, call them and ask them specific questions regarding the intention of the program I'm about to present. They were always gracious, always kind. And they always gave me useful information, which I would incorporate into that program that day for that group. They would know it's not a standard event. I would tell the group the name of the people, the name of the person, rather, that I consulted with, and I would always say, how about a big round of applause for George Jones for sharing about da-da-da-da-da, and they always would do it. And by the way, getting the audience to applaud something several times during your program has the effect of bringing their consciousness back into the room. And this is so important, because I want you to know this. Audience members can stare at you pleasantly, don't misinterpret that, gaze into your eyes, so to speak, as if they're paying rapt attention to you, and their mind could be a million miles away. That TV show they saw last night, the project they have to finish, you think that they're paying attention to you, and really they may not be. So getting them to applaud, and even stand and applaud, and that's a good idea too, brings them back into the room. The next point that I like to include in my programs is magic. Now, do not misinterpret. I do not do magic tricks. I've tried, and I'm not good at it. And I would still bring magic into the room, and here's how I would do it. I would say to the audience, you will notice, folks, that on your learning guide, there are many blank spaces on which you are to fill in words. I will tell you what those words are. And whether or not you fill in those words, the papers you have in your hand when you leave this room at the end of this program will have every word filled in. How do I do that? Oh, I'm not going to tell you. Just watch what happens. At the end of the program, it looks like ordinary paper. And by the way, David, the way I really would do that was to prepare a second handout with all the words on it and give them that at the end.
Okay, so and so what you mean is you're leaving blank spaces that they need to fill in during the program?
Right. And then what I would do is reproduce the same pages of the learning guide, and I would do it in a way that I could get four pages onto one. You simply use a copier to reduce the size. However, before I do the reduction, I would fill in all the words. So on a single page, a single sheet of paper, I would have four pages of information with all of the answers. On the other side of that page, four more pages. So just a couple of extra pages can include as much as 16 pages of information with every word clearly printed and easy to understand. And they're always delighted that that happened, because the whole time I'm talking, sharing with them, they're trying to figure out, how is he doing this? And yet, at the end of the day, the end of the hour, every page they have in their hand, because I'll give it to them at the end, will have every word filled in.
Right, so that increases your interaction with them after the program.
Exactly,
right.
Exactly. I would. Oh, and by the way, when a handout has multiple pages, handout, learning guide, I would always tell them what page to be on. Their mind can move out of the room completely. You've got to bring them back into the room constantly. And in terms of the learning guide, I happen to like a type of learning guide production which is known in the field of speaking, as the Swiss cheese method. Now, I will explain that. Swiss cheese has a bunch of holes in it. That's what Swiss cheese has. So I would give them a learning guide with words missing. The most important words would be missing, but there would be a long underline where that word is to go. And as I'm sharing the information, I would say, make this note. Catch this now. It's the only time I'm going to say this. Be sure you're on page 5 and fill in the missing words as I share this insight with you.
Right, so that keeps them engaged and active during your talk.
That's very important. Keep them engaged and active. Next point, every point that I made would be illustrated with a story that I prepared in advance. So I would tell stories from my life, illustrated. I can give you a wonderful example of an illustrative story that I love to tell. I tell the story when, as a kid, I could scrounge a nickel or a dime out of my mom for an ice cream cone. And within a few blocks of where my family lived in Ventnor, New Jersey, there were four little stores where an 8-9-year-old kid could get an ice cream cone. And I would check them all out because I wanted the most and the best for my nickel or my dime. One of those stores, having made the ice cream cone, would invert it into a little bowl of what we called at the time Jimmy's Little Chocolate Sprinkles. Then the ice cream cone would be handed to me. Well, those Jimmy's were a little something extra. So when I was doing customer service trainings, I would say, always give the audience a little something extra. Do more for the audience. These are favorite words of mine. Do more than is expected. Do more than is required. Do more than anyone in their right mind would do. And that drives the point home.
Yeah, wow.
The next point, I would keep the program squeaky clean. Absolutely no blue humor. A model to imagine is a 6-year-old little girl in pinafore and pigtails sitting in the front row looking right into your eyes. Don't say anything to stain the consciousness of that innocent little child. Also, as part of my programs, I would always emphasize integrity and lofty principles, together with, you know, plain common sense and street smart defenses against scoundrels, because I want the audience to know it's not necessarily an ideal world out there. Finally, I would use a closing process involving giving the audience extra handouts, extra single sheets that they never expected, including that special that special one with all of the spaces filled in.
Right, the magic one.
I would close the program with a dramatic closing story.
Okay, so as long as you're mentioning it, you know, and one of our items is how to close your program, tell us a bit more about that.
Well, let me explain. Number one, and you have heard me say this, David, don't thank the audience. Don't thank the audience. Have something to say which is so exciting and so valuable that they cannot forget it. Now, I'll give you an example of this. I heard Brian Tracy speak at a general session of the National Speakers Association. And the way he closed, he said words which were so exciting and so good, and he said them so fast that you couldn't possibly have the time to write them down. I had to buy the recording of the program, and I captured those words. So here's an example of what one great speaker said just before he left the platform, and he certainly did not say thank you. These are the exact words. Be more of what you are. Be all of what you are. Do what you love. Do it with your whole heart. Do it with passion and a clear vision of where you're going and a commitment to become excellent and the courage to face your fears and to be realistic and honest with yourself and to take complete responsibility for your future. And if you do that, and if every morning you wake up and hit the ground running, you will be outstanding in your field. That was his last word. And then the audience applauded, and he left the platform. That's a great way to run a program.
Yeah.
And it should be words that you can see, words of your own, not words you heard some speaker deliver.
And the suggestion you made to me of closing a program in silence, is that like a standard kind of thing that you would do regularly, or is that just sort of an exercise you wanted me to try?
Well, I'm not sure if you know exactly what my intention was. There is a point where you say your final words, not including thank you. Having said those words, you simply stand there with your arms at your side, relaxing at your side, smiling and looking at the audience. And they realize after a few seconds, well, I guess this speaker has finished what he's going to say. Then comes the wild applause. We pray.
Right, and this is something that you'd want us to do all the time, regularly.
There's always an exception to the rule.
Uh-huh.
I don't dare make that flat-out recommendation because there may be times when it's not appropriate. However, it's a good idea.
Okay. Bert, you have an item here. How to deliver value every minute.
Oh, I'm so glad you asked me for that. Let me tell you. Be sure that when you stand before an audience, you are the authentic you. The first president of the National Speakers Association, now gone, his name was Bill Gove, and he had a favorite four-word saying, a very humble and homely saying, go with what brung ya. That's what Bill Gove said. Now, what does that mean? Start with your roots. That's each person listening to this call. Where you came from, your life experience, your personal findings. Think about what you must speak about, not from your mouth, not from your lungs, from your heart. Speak about that which wells up from the depths of your beliefs, from your most profound convictions, from the very core of your being, from your essence. Now, when you do that with an audience, they know you're really there, that you really care. I recommend that you address matters, findings, and issues that are so meaningful to you that even if you weren't a paid expert, you would still seek every possible opportunity to share your insights and make your recommendations.
Are what you're saying that when we come from our passion and our heart, then we'll be delivering value every minute? Is that kind of where you're going with that?
Allow yourself to become deeply emotionally involved in your message, meaning what you say, not just saying the words, lots of emotion, lots of depth, lots of feeling built in to what you are saying. Simple as that. Now keep in mind, there may be an assigned topic, and so you blend these aspects of your own essence into the assigned topic as asides, as something you just thought of in the moment, and indeed it will be something you planned to say. Simple as that.
So anything else about delivering value every minute?
Oh, there certainly is. Let's go to the aspect of research before the program. It is not enough to come knowing a lot about the topic, knowing a lot about your personal philosophy and the difference you want to make in the world. I recommend that you do personal hands-on research. Fortunately, you can do this mostly on the internet. If you're speaking for a company, you can go to the website of the company, where you may be able to find and download printed copies of the most recent speeches by the chief executive officer, the president. You go to the website to learn more about the company, where they are in their industry, what's going on within the company, because you then speak as one who knows. Now, if you want to do more in-depth research, just punch in the name of the company in Google and see what comes up. Punch in the name of the industry in Google and see what comes up. And if you want to go into hard copy research, you can hardly do better than the World Almanac. It's been, or the Information Please Almanac. These are annuals, and they've been published for since I was a little boy. And for still more information, you can go to the reference library at your largest local library. Those people are trained researchers. They delight in unearthing hard-to-find information and happily share it with you. If there's a book that you need and the library doesn't have it, they will get it for you from interlibrary loan, even interlibrary loan in other countries. I do this all the time. Another non-internet research source is the Statistical Abstract of the United States. That's an annual. You learn all sorts of stuff. And then the New York Times Guide to Reference Materials is still another useful research source. And, of course, now online is the entire Encyclopedia Britannica.
And so it's not enough to be an expert and to know a lot about your topic. What I hear you saying is that we need to be knowledgeable about the people we're speaking to.
Exactly.
And their concerns and their demographics, and to make our topic and our knowledge relevant to them.
You said that right. Give the audience the absolute best you can give them. Make sure your final words when you give a program are your words, not someone else's words. Words that leave them feeling great about themselves. One of my early mentors put it like this: start them with a smile, leave them with a lump in their throat. Simple as that. And you do that by surrendering to the needs of that audience, to the hidden desires of that audience for where they want to go.
Great.
Another point in delivering a lot of value to the audience is to have a sprinkling of humor. You don't have to be Johnny Carson or Jay Leno. Simply allow the pratfalls of your life to be shared with the audience in a way that can cause them to laugh. Again, self-deprecating humor.
I just want to share that one of the most valuable exercises you gave to me early on was, you know, to do my timeline to the significant events in my life,
mm-hmm.
and to come up with stories related to different times in my life that were significant or, you know, funny or odd. And, you know, of course, I live my life. I know my life. I know all these stories. But the activity of writing them down, not writing out the whole story, but just kind of listing these things,
mm-hmm.
is really, really valuable, because when I'm preparing a talk, I can go back to that and I can choose, you know, the stories that might fit best. But one of the ones that I'm very glad I did that exercise, because I use the story all the time. It's sort of my signature story now. And without you giving me that exercise, I probably would have not, probably would have just forgotten it, you know, an episode in my past. But it's the time that I crashed my sailboat into the rocks of Alcatraz.
Yes, yes.
It's a true story, and I use it all the time. And, you know, it's funny, and it's real. And so I think in our life we have humor, we have stories that can teach, stories that can make people laugh, stories that can illustrate points,
mm-hmm.
and we just have to mine them, and the easy way to mine them is just to write out your timeline, all the significant
right.
episodes in your life that you can remember.
You said it right.
Okay, so tell us the story of yours.
Well, I've got so many. Let me tell you how I learned about engaging conditions and circumstances and letting nothing stop you from getting where you want to go. This goes back to when I was about 8 years old, living in Ventnor, New Jersey, near the Back Bay, and in fact, living within 150 feet of the water. And there was a sewer pipe outside the bulkhead that kept the water from invading the land. And one morning I woke up, just a little kid, remember, and there was a little boat moored, that is tied with a rope, to this sewer pipe. And the next morning it was still there, no license plate, no identification, and it had a mast, by the way, and a sail, a mainsail. And I thought, I think I'll just take this little boat out for a ride. Well, I never learned how to sail until that time, and it had oars and an oar lock. It was a kind of a boat which with a real name. It's called a sabot. There are actually organizations of sabot owners, sabot being the Dutch word for shoe. In due course, I taught myself to sail. I could sail this little boat anywhere on the Back Bay that I wanted to sail it, no matter how the wind was blowing, no matter how the tide was going. I could engage prevailing conditions, use them to get from where I am to where I want to go. Think of sailing ships. They engage the winds and tides as they are. They can cross the ocean going one way. They can cross the ocean going the other way. Well, let me tell you my favorite game as a small boy. I would sail this little boat, and I learned to become a good sailor, learned how to engage the mainsail. There was no jib, just a mainsail and a rudder. That was all I had. I learned how to sail this boat down to the Oxford Avenue Bridge, the bridge linking Ventnor with Ventnor Heights. Now, that was a drawbridge with a bridge keeper, and I had a little toot-toot bicycle horn, and as I approached the bridge, I would toot my little horn, and since my mast was 15 feet high in this little 9-foot boat, the bridge keeper had to lower the big arm, the bridge had to be raised up, all the traffic would stop, and I would sail through there at a stately 1 mile per hour, being so proud of myself. I'd get to the other side, the bridge would close. I would tack, turn the boat around, toot my little horn again, and stop all the traffic again, and then sail through at about 1 mile per hour, as I said, and then sail on home. This was my favorite game. I learned a vital life lesson from this game, David. I learned that it doesn't matter what conditions exist outside of ourselves, how negative they may be, we can engage the winds and tides of our life and engage them to take us from where we are to where we want to be. And this goes far beyond sailing a boat, David. It is propelling our adventure through life to where we want to go, moving ourselves up in the world. I've told that story for over 40 years.
Yeah, and annoying other drivers while we're at it, right?
Exactly, naturally.
Why should we reveal our warts and flaws?
Oh, that's easy. If you pretend to be an all-wise, all-knowing guru type, you know, standing a foot above everybody else, the audience won't believe you. They want to know that you are mortal, that you've made mistakes, that you're human. I'm not proud of the fact that I've been married 3 times. I wish I would have found that right person right in the beginning. However, I admit it, that I have flaws. I'm not proud of many aspects of my life, but I engaged the negative aspects of my life to help me continue to grow and to evolve. And so I want them to know this, and I'll tell stories on myself, and to me it's okay, because they'll know I'm an ordinary human being doing extraordinary things. And I will often say, you can do just as well. You can do it too. Just take yourself in hand, decide where you want to go, and let nothing stop you.
Wow. Thank you, Bert.
You're welcome.
At this point, I'd like to share with everybody listening, this is the little commercial part now, that we have a resource for you. Out of all Bert's products, he has two of them. One in particular called Presentation Magic. Then there's another one called How to Create a Great Program Manual. And given that we are experts that speak and we want to put information in the hands of our participants, being able to create a great program manual or handout is just really, really important. So I've asked Bert to bundle these two things together and give us his best price possible. And so when I send you out the link with the audio program, you'll see a box that will tell you a bit about presentation magic and how to create a great program manual. It's an excellent price. It's bundled together. I personally have presentation magic, and I've used it. It makes it so easy to prepare your program and do a really good job for your audience. You can't have Bert there with you all the time. And so this is like a mentor in a box, presentation magic. Would that be an accurate way of describing it, Bert?
Yes, it would. You see, years ago, I was called in to do a program. A meeting planner decided that she liked me. She didn't want me to do anything that I was prepared to do. She said, I'll tell you what we need, Bert, and perhaps you can write the program. And in that case, it happened to be something about management. She gave me a title, Managing with Political Savvy. And this was for the managers of trade show booths, major companies that went all around the country with their trade show booths in big flatbed trucks. And they would run the booth for 4 or 5 days in this location, 3 or 4 days in the next. And they were having much trouble with political matters within their organization. So I wrote the program. I knew nothing about the subject, but I researched the subject in the ways in which I teach in my work. And it was a dynamite program. It was absolutely outstanding. And then I delivered in Sedona to an audience of my inner circle members. I then delivered what came out to about 2 hours and 20 minutes of explanation about how I did it. And now in this album containing 3 CDs and a substantial manual, I show in detail exactly how you can create a program, an excellent program that audiences will love, on a program you've never done before, on a topic you know nothing about. And that's the subject. And of course, when you do know about the topic, you can be even better.
Yeah, there's things in here that are just priceless, like, you know, the feeding frenzy close. I just love that one, you know, to be able to close in such a way that they, you know, they're just so hungry to buy your products or hire you. And it's an art and a science, and you give us, you know, the exact steps to do. But I just love that, the feeding frenzy close.
That's true.
You know, and designing your program evaluation to collect testimonials and encourage people to say great things about you and refer to you. So I do highly, highly recommend checking out Bert's presentation magic and the How to Create a Good Program Manual. Because when we're actually doing this, folks, like I mentioned earlier, doing it on my own, I could probably be okay. But with Bert's stuff, and it's just really, really happy about doing a great job, not just a good job, but a great job, both on the platform and also for the audience before and after, with the program materials and the handouts. And so if we're going to do this well, it's going to take a little bit of investment.
My mouth gets very dry. And I was wondering what I can do. I don't feel comfortable having a throat lozenge in my mouth because I don't want to choke on it. But what else can we do to keep our mouth moist if we can't always grab a glass of water while we're speaking?
I'm more than happy to tell you. Always have one of those little plastic bottles of spring water or some kind of good water so you can just pick it up, take a pause, put it in your mouth. I've been doing it during this call. You didn't know it, but I was doing it. And while you're pausing for breath, take a little swig of water, not a lot, and thus your mouth gets lubricated. That's really all there is to it.
Yeah, so it is okay to stop talking and take a drink of water.
Of course.
One time I did that, I spilled the entire glass of water down my front.
Good idea.
That was fun. What about the cellular phone issue? How do you address that?
Oh, yes,
especially with people?
I would say, how many people in this room, by a show of hands, have your cellular phone in your purse, in your pocket, somewhere on your person? If you have it, raise your hand. Then I would say, now please get that cellular phone out in your hand. And they would do that. Now please turn it to off position, not on
vibrate.
Off. And I would ask everyone to do that. And I said, let's make a deal. The person whose cellular phone rings during this program buys lunch for everybody in the room.
That's great.
And then if it's the afternoon, it gets worse. They buy dinner for everybody in the room. Well, fortunately, that did not happen during my program because I said it every day. It was a 3-day event, and I repeated it every day.
That's great. Thank you so much.
Hey, Bert, that reminds me of something that you emphasize, which is to be the master of the room.
That's right. You are in charge of the room. It's your room.
Right.
And you have to let them know it.
And the audience needs that from you. So,
right.
You know, they need you to be in charge. They need you to take care of everybody's needs. They need you to say, turn off your cell phone. You know,
absolutely.
The people that don't have cell phones or they're considered enough to have theirs on vibrate or off, they're going to get annoyed if somebody else's cell phone is on.
Exactly.
So, yeah, so part of your performance is being a master of the room, and it is okay to direct them. And speakers that are a little bit more indirect in their communication or a little less assertive, you know, they might feel a little challenged by that. But, you know, we got to be firm with folks.
Absolutely. And another way of doing it, you can say there's a $50 fine. And we'll give this to the Red Cross, the Salvation Army. You pick a charity, I don't care. But they pay actual money if their cell phone rings and you enforce it.
Yeah, I know. One thing I appreciated is I went to the movies last weekend, and one of the ushers, before the movie starts, comes in front of the room and asks everybody to turn their cell phones off or put it on vibrate. I appreciated that so much.
Can you give any suggestions or ideas for people in the audience who maybe interrupt or want to get a lot of attention?
Yes, there are such people. I would simply have to say to them in the most gentle way, something along the lines of, whatever it is they say, I understand, you say to this person. Many people feel that way. And then I would go on with my topic. I would not respond to them. Don't get into a dialogue with a heckler. Or someone who wants to take over your program. Simply, you've got the microphone in your hand, remember that. Mm-hmm. Simply tell them, I understand. Many people feel that way. Now, as I was saying, and you get right back into your program. Mm-hmm. You know, in all these years of doing national programs for, hundreds and hundreds of audiences, I have been fortunate. I've never really had a serious heckler. They've simply shut up, so to speak, after one or two shots. Oh, I'll give you a technique I use sometimes. I will walk over to that person, and I will say to them, now, this is right in a big room. I'll walk over to where they are, and I'm right there talking to them, and the whole audience is hearing me. And I'm saying, you know, I know you really understand this so well, and I've got to share with the people in the room in a way that they'll understand it, too. So I know that you'll want to let me do that and give the people what they've come here to get. Isn't that right? And they'll tend to say yes. And that will usually shut them up also.
Yeah. And what about those that just seem to have lots of questions and they kind of act like they're the only one in the room and they want your attention?
Ah, you have selective hearing. At a certain point, when a person is just overdoing it, trying to dominate the meeting, you no longer hear their questions. You just don't hear them.
Ah, okay.
You accept questions from somebody else.
So you're basically ignoring.
Yes, selective hearing is the secret.
Uh-huh. Well, that sounds easy enough.
Yeah, that's helpful. Thank you.
But in the same light on that, wouldn't that maybe put off some people and wonder about your behavior? I mean, that to me might be an issue.
You have to be gentle and kind and understanding at all times. And taking all of that into account, and there have been times in my life when I've said something from the platform that I wasn't proud of, and I sure won't repeat those times for you. I can only say that there may be people who are trying to use their presence in your meeting as therapy for them. Or they may need a therapist and not a speaker. So, again, you don't want them to feel bad. You don't want to have to ask them to leave. You simply are as gentle and yet firm as you possibly can be with them. In fact, you can tell them, you might say something like this. Let's say their name is Charlie. Making up the name. Charlie, I'd like to get together with you when the program is over and review your questions in detail. I'm not running away. I will have time. But since we have 400 people in the room, each of whom I need to satisfy, please understand, will you get together with me after the program, Charlie? And then I'll nod my head as if to symbolize to Charlie back there that it would be nice if he nods his head too. And the average person will get the idea. They'll nod their head. I have never, ever had to have someone removed from the room. Never happened to me.
in addition to ignoring, I imagine it would also be quite fine to say, if somebody has their hand up and they're asking the fourth or fifth question and you need to move on, to be able to say, let's give some other people a chance.
Yes.
Yeah. And everybody in the room will understand that. You know, it's not rude. It's just being fair.
These are Ron Arden's, A-R-D-E-N, labels for these pauses. So I'm sharing his work. The first pause that Ron Arden tells us about, he calls the sense, S-E-N-S-E, pause. 1 or 2 seconds. You use it to let your points sink in. This pause, by the way, according to Ron Arden, replaces the comma. The second pause he calls the transitional silence. Again, in his words, this pause replaces the period. The third he calls the reflective silence. And you just heard the sound of silence.
Yeah.
Three to 5 seconds.
So if there's something you want the audience to think about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You use it after you say something very significant. Call it the white space. The fourth of Ron Arden's 9 pauses, he called the dramatic pause. You use this pause before a dramatic statement, and then you follow the dramatic statement, as Ron Arden says, with the reflective pause. And please note, I'm using some pauses right now to let these ideas sink in. The fifth one of Ron Arden's 9 pauses, he calls the pause for effect. That's a theatrical technique to draw your audience in. I just did it twice. You use this pause in mid-sentence, as I just did for a third time. Now here's the sixth pause of the pauses that Ron Arden teaches. The emphatic pause. Using his exact words, place a thin slice of time on each side of a significant word. Let that pause be 1 heartbeat long. Pause number 7. The spontaneity pause. You're hunting for the right word. Now I just did it.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear that happen to the spot in the moment? You're hunting for the right word. I'll do that one again. The spontaneity pause. The intention here is to not appear so facile.
Right, to not appear scripted.
Right.
Yeah.
Something you just thought of in the moment. Pause number 8. He calls the pause to relinquish control. And that means, and you've been modeling this, David, whether you knew it or not, when you're doing Q&A, as we are in the moment, you're silent briefly to allow a person to say something. And finally, final one, the number 9, Ron Arden calls this the sensory pause, and as he calls it, 3 or 4 beats. Now, you might use that one, again, his words, following very graphic language. Now, I won't get very graphic on this CD, I promise, but I will say something. After you reach them where their hair is short, after you reach them where their hair is short, you pause for 3 or 4 seconds to let that one sink in.
So they're focusing on the image.
Exactly. You're not using any blue language. That's it, David. Those are the Ron Arden 9 pauses.
Outstanding. Thank you, Bert. You know what? I got to share with you guys. I did a program and I videotaped myself. Now, Bert says he does not need to see anything. He likes to receive recordings, so he'll listen. He can get everything he needs from listening. So every time I do a program, I send him a CD. However, one time, I sent him a video. And the first thing he said, which was very, very helpful, and I haven't done it since, is, David, keep your hands out of your pockets. So how's that for shining on the platform? Keep your hands out of your pockets.
When you're doing something which might be a two-part thing and you're having people leave for a lunch period and need to get back on time to start on time, otherwise it's going to mess up your timing of things, what is the best way to make sure that they get back on time?
Here's what you do. You get them to agree to look at their watch, and you look at your watch. And let's say for the moment, you know, I'm looking at my clock on the wall, but pretend it's my watch. And I say, well, it's in, where I am, Mountain Standard Time, it's 2:19 p.m. Let's call that, I would say, workshop time. Let's agree we're going to allow exactly 1 hour for the lunch break, and that at 1:19 p.m. we resume this program. If you agree, signify your agreement by raising your hand. And presumably everyone raises their hand. And then at 1:19 or 2:19, whatever the time that the time has expired, you start the program, whether they're there or not.
A couple of things I found helpful is to give them a shorter time than you're really going to allow for the break. So you tell them it's a 10-minute break, but you're really going to allow 15 minutes. And then when you start, you're there, you're in front of the room, you're ready to go, and there are people in the room, then take questions while you're waiting for other people to filter in and sit down and get settled. You know, that's a great time for a question-answer period.
Sometimes after my speaking, I get inundated with people coming up to the front of the room, and then I can't escape. I can't even get a glass of water. I can't use the restroom. I can't sit down, and it's just overwhelming, and they won't let me out of the space. And sometimes I have problems with men standing much too close to me, and it's extremely uncomfortable, and I can't really back up anywhere. Do you have any suggestions on this?
I'm going to recommend that you do what I've seen Tom Peters do. Prepare to autograph your book. What, you haven't written a book then? Write a book. And say, I'm going to be autographing my books right here. You can get your book at the back of the room, and I'm going to sit here and autograph your book for you. Or something. And if you don't have a book, Tara, let it be the program manual, the learning guide. Whatever you have given them, tell them I'm going to sit here and autograph one at a time, and I'll put your name on it. That way you're seated, and you arrange to have a place to sit, and let them bring up, and would you please form a single line? Now, forming a line keeps them from crowding around you.
And also, the macro suggestion might be to plan what you're going to do when the program closes. So, are you going to do a book signing? Are you going to have some back-of-the-room sales? Are you going to take questions by the door? So plan what you're going to do at the end of the program so you're not just standing around and being inundated. You tell people, you know, I'll meet you in the back of the room where I'll be signing some books. Or
that's perfect.
Something like that.
Call it the autograph table. I'll meet you at the autograph table in the back of the room. And then the moment you stop speaking, before they have a chance to get up from their seats, you go straight down to the back of the room where you have a place waiting for you to sit down, where there's a glass of water you can drink if you want it, and where they can't get behind you because your back is to the wall. You're behind
perfect.
The counter, so to speak.
Yeah,
so anything would work as long as you tell them ahead of time.
Right.
You can even tell them, I'm going to take a 5-minute break and I'll be at the autograph table in 5 minutes. I'll meet you there.
That's David. Another idea. Let you get to the restroom. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
What do you do if you pronounce a word wrong? Should you bring it to the audience's attention? Because I know at times if I pronounce a word wrong, it's on my mind while I'm speaking. And that will cause me to forget what I'm speaking about because I'm thinking about my articulation because I pronounced a word wrong.
Simply repeat the word again in the moment, correctly pronounced. That's all there is to it.
Oh, and you know what I do? I do that all the time because sometimes my mouth runs ahead of my head. And so I'll say something and it'll come out really screwed up. And then I'll say, did I really say that? And then I'll say it the way it was supposed to be, and then just keep on going.
I've been doing this stuff for 27 years. 1978, I gave my first program that I was sponsoring myself. It was called the Personal Achievement Training. And then within 5 years, I was speaking nationally, and a few years later, internationally. So when I give you guidance, it's based on my experience. The guidance I share with you, let's call it, if you will, my subjective truth. I do not call it objective truth. I call it subjective truth, my perceived truth, based on my experience. and in my experience, end your program with something transcendent, something fascinating, something that they love to hear, and then just stop talking.
So here's what I'd like to close with on that point. As Bert's client, what I've heard him tell me quite a few times is, David, I want you to pretend I know what I'm talking about.
Right.
And so that's how we're going to close today, guys. Pretend that Bert knows what he's talking about. And we'll see you on Friday for How to Get Paid as a Professional Speaker. Thanks for joining us.